G'day mate, how you going? This is Adam O'Brien and welcome to Fandom Podcast Network, here where we enjoy all forms of fandom. Well, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, I bring you Lethal Mullet Podcast, an Australian look at B-grade action films from the 1980s. That's right, going back to that beloved time when we had Chuck Norris on almost every Friday night here in Australia, kicking, punching, and shooting his way to the top, alongside Jean-Claude Van Damme, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the likes of many of the others that came after him, Sylvester Stallone. We even look at some of the heroes you may not know, all here on one fortnightly podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can check it out also on Podbean if you've got the Podbean app. Make sure you check it out. Now, let's get into the episode here on Fandom Podcast Network.
G'day, mate. How you going? This is Adam O'Brien coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, here from Fandom Podcast Network's amazing B-grade action movie extravaganza. That's right, Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, and I tell you what, we've got some amazing stuff on this fortnight's show. That's right. We're going to be looking at some stuff that's really interesting coming up in the next couple of weeks, especially here in Australia as we head into, of course, the Christmas season, which is, of course, our hottest time of the year. That's right. For you that are in other parts of the world or the other hemisphere, we're having the lovely winter, of course. Winter's such a great time of the year when you can, obviously, as it gets colder, you just put more layers on. Well, guess what? Here in Australia, it's summer. And particularly here in Queensland, it's sweltering. Yes. We're looking at temperatures that would be the equivalent of 105, 110 degrees and 100% humidity. That's right. It's the best time to stay inside, crank the aircon and watch Arnold Schwarzenegger take on 100 people. That's right, with one machine gun, with unlimited ammo. It just keeps going and going and going. It is the Energizer Bunny of M60s. Come on, do it now. But really, what it is a time to stay inside, keep hydrated, and, of course, be entertained by these amazing films that we watched back in the old days. One of the ones I picked up this week, actually, which is really, really exciting, because, again, very hard to find out here in Australia, is Iron Eagle. That's right. Iron Eagle was the famous film where a young son of a fighter pilot has to try and find his father and has to in turn become an F-16 fighter pilot himself under the tutelage of an amazing mentor in Lou Gossett Jr. Who better? And it is an amazing film. I mean, that is just one of those great films, which is, I suppose, like, you know, coming in the wake of films like Top Gun, which were, of course, obviously not B-grade, you know, something like Iron Eagle goes straight out to VHS and became a super big hit out here in Australia. I don't know. We pretty much wore out my VHS. The tape was that warm from being rewound and watched. We loved it. But I tell you what, there's an amazing amount of clones of that film, just like there is Top Gun. But tonight, we're going to be chatting to Jedi Schwar of Techno Retro Dads. Of course, you know that I love that show, and I hope you guys and girls out there have checked out the amazing work that they do over there. It is an amazing show which looks at, again, a little bit like us. We look at the films of the past, but they also look at games and different toys and different franchises that we all loved back in the day. And of course, Schwar's a dear friend of mine, and we're going to have him on today chatting about his love of 1980s action films and more. And we'll catch up to see what he's up to as well. We also got a few things in the news segment coming up very, very soon before we chat to Schwar, which we're going to be looking at, of course, the upcoming Watchmen TV series, which has been all over the internet right now with some of the amazing stuff that that's going to be like. Of course, it's a 1980s themed one because Watchmen is set in 1985, albeit a alternate universe of 1985. But this one is going to be looking at being a sequel. That's right. In some ways, not so much to the film, but more of that in the news segment. And before we get in there, let's look at how you can get in contact with, of course, this channel, and of course, this show. All right, before we get into the episode tonight, here's where you can catch this show and many others like it on Fandom Podcast Network at fpnet.podbean.com, which is our main master feed. You also catch the actual show itself on the Podbean app. It's one of the greatest ways to check out the show. Also, if you like all the shows, you can catch them at all these different places where you can catch podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and of course, Google Play if you're an Android user. Now, also on social media channels, you can find us on Twitter at FanPod Network, and on Facebook, you can catch us at Fandom Podcast Network's page there at facebook.com/FandomPodcastNetwork. If you want to catch us on the email lines, email any ideas you have that the show might be able to cover, any other films you think that have been fantastic, you can catch us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can catch me, the host, Adam O'Brien, at obpopculture on Twitter and, of course, on Instagram as well, same handle. And don't forget to catch me on my other show, The Fantha from Down Under, a fortnightly look at Star Wars from Down Under on Fantha Tracks Radio or FanthaTracks.com. And also check out the great shows that I'm doing here on Fandom Podcast Network's Couch Potato Theatre, where we look at Mad Max with Maximum Couch Potato, and also our brand new show, The Spicing Guild, looking at the adaptations of Frank Herbert's Dune. Now, let's get into the show. So it's an interesting time for film. And here in the news segment, we're going to be talking about film versus TV. And one of the interesting things is I think a lot of the stars of the 1980s and the 1990s are starting to make the transition to TV. You can thank shows like Game of Thrones and, of course, Outlander. Massive, huge shows, particularly on HBO. And, of course, now thanks to Netflix, which is really getting a good chance to, have that bigger budget and that bigger sort of life when it comes to, telling a great story. Westworld's another example, too. Of course, now this amazing new series, of course, being derived from its original source, Alan Moore's Watchmen. Now, this is an interesting concept that they've got here. Now, the original, of course, was adapted by Zack Snyder in 2009 for Watchmen, which is probably one of the most literal translations of or adaptations of material. Obviously, the ending was changed, and there's a few things here and there, but particularly if you get the director's cut on Blu-ray, that Watchmen is pretty close to the material. You're never going to get exactly when you get anything from whether it's a comic or from a literary source into its film version. It's not going to be exact. It's just not going to happen. But this is an interesting idea, and of course, this takes things into a new realm. Now, it's an alternate universe. 1985 was when the original story was set. This, taking up many years afterwards, we guess, because we can now see that Ozymandias is being played by Jeremy Irons. And, of course, he's not a young actor. He's been around a little while. But it's interesting that this is basically, it's an alternate history of what we've got. And, of course, the superheroes in this universe are actually vigilantes. And the vigilantes themselves are usually at conflict with the government and with the authorities in that universe. So, of course, it makes for amazing drama. So we've got in the cast Regina King, Don Johnson, Tim Blake Nelson, Louis Gossett Jr. How good is that? Adelaide Clemens, Andrew Howard, Tim Missen, Francis Fisher, and, of course, a host of others that are going to be involved in this too. Now, on the Watchmen's Instagram page just today, that's right, Saturday, it is the 24th today of November. And what's interesting is they've released three separate photos from the filming of the TV show. And it shows police officers in sort of like a Rorschach mask, if you like, with yellow around them as well. So it's, again, taking what would be I suppose, Rorschach style look to the police force. And again, who knows what the story's about? We have no idea. I'm guessing this is, you know, the ramifications of what Ozymandias did in the original story to the world to bring it to peace and to take that further. See what has happened. What's the legacy of this? And I just love the names that are involved in this. If not, this might be an even more interesting work. And of course, being made by Warner Brothers and DC as well, and being shown on HBO. So it is the perfect format. But again, I will be staying tuned to any and all news sources for movies and TV right now, because obviously it's a good time to find out what this is all about. So I'm excited. I hope you guys are all excited out there and ready for this amazing new series. I'm very excited. I think this could be a really interesting telling of what superheroes are like in this alternate universe of The Watchmen.
Oh, hello. Welcome back to the show. And, of course, here on Leather and Mullet, we always look at great films you've never heard of. You've never probably heard of half of these films, but we're going to be getting right into the heart of it, here on Leather and Mullet.
On this week's episode, I don't have a film to review, as I'm currently actually going through a stack of B-grades, which I'm going to be showing you in the next couple of weeks. We have Death Before Dishonor, Laser Mission, and one I've never seen. Now, this is called DEFCON 4, Defense Condition 4, with Tim Choate, Kate Lynch, and John Walsh. And if anything, it looks like, from just the cover and just the story, it looks like post-apocalyptic meets Space Crash, which looks really interesting. I love the cover art of this. It's just fantastic. I'll probably show it on at Obi Pop Culture on Twitter, on my Twitter handle. So, but in the next episode, in a couple of weeks, I'll probably have a review of this one because it certainly looks interesting. Anyway, time for our main event here, chatting to Techno Retro Dad's co-host, the one, the only, the awesome Jedi Schwa. Here he is.
Welcome to Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, joining me all the way from Colorado. Guess what? That's in the United States, listeners. That's true. It's true. And it is an absolute pleasure to chat to the one, the only, Jedi Schwa of Techno Retro Dads. Mate, how are you?
Hi, I'm great, everybody. Oh, man, Adam, thank you so much for having me here tonight. I love getting together with you and just talking about just anything.
Oh, no. Well, nice. Let's talk about Colorado for a second. I was watching a little mini-series the other day, and the majority of it takes place in Colorado. It is by the name of Stephen King's The Stand.
Oh, yeah, The Stand. Legendary. You know, so The Stand, it has a big scene where they go through this dark, scary tunnel. It's not in the movie, the miniseries or anything, but it's in the book. And I can't tell you how many times I have gone through that tunnel. And every time I do, it's up in the mountains. It's real long, so it takes you a long time to get through. Yeah, there you go. And he goes through this tunnel, the Eisenhower Tunnel is what it's called. And oh man, every time I go through it, I just imagine that everything's been wiped out in the world and it's dark and there's creepy stuff coming after me. It's crazy.
So. I love it. And it's classic Stephen King material, The Old Stand.
Yeah. Another, of course, The Shining also takes place in Colorado. In the Stanley Hotel up in Estes Park, which is where my wife wanted to have our wedding. We ended up not being able to do that, but we still love it up there. It's gorgeous, and the hotel is super creepy and cool.
Has it got the high ceilings that they had in the movie one? Like the one that's like in where is it? UK, I think that one is.
I've never actually been in the hotel. I've seen the outside of it, and we've been up to Estes Park a bunch of times, but never gone in the hotel. So.
Oh wow, God, I love it. See, here's a great thing for you fans out there. Stephen King's universe is our universe. That's the great thing about it.
Oh, yeah.
It really is. And it's all Dark Tower. All of it is the Dark Tower. But we're not here to talk about that today. We're here to talk about B-grade action films because it's Lethal Mullet Podcast, mate. I tell you, And you are just the one to chat to about it, because I tell you what, Retro is your middle name.
Thank you. Yes, it is. It is. That's a, sometimes I just use R for an initial, but yeah, when you spell it out, it is Retro.
Now, we're looking at different films the last couple of weeks. We've been looking at Chuck Norris movies in particular. We've had a look at The Delta Force, which, of course, is quintessential Chuck when you think about it.
Yeah, no, now, just to be clear, you don't watch Chuck Norris movies. Chuck Norris movies watch you.
And he's so strong, he swims through land.
That's right.
And the worst offender is this one. Did you know he got shot the other day?
Really?
Yeah. Chuck Norris got shot the other day. Yeah, the bullet's in hospital in critical condition.
Oh, well, we'll wish for the best for that bullet.
Oh, I tell you what, I love it. What's interesting about the movies that we've seen is, obviously, he can't act. He's not an Oscar-winning performer. But, God, he can kick.
That's really all that takes. And that, which is why I'm not in any movies, because I can't do either one. But that's okay.
But what's great about the ones we... So we've looked at that one. We've also looked at Invasion USA, which is another one we're going to be doing very soon. And actually has an actor from the movie we're going to be talking about today, which is very, very interesting. Richard Lynch, who was in just about every TV show. He was in Battlestar Galactica. He was in Buck Rogers. He was in a heap of movies as well.
He was one of those quintessential 70s and 80s actors. You know, that just it. He was so good at playing a tough guy, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Or a guy that thought he was tough, maybe I should say, because that's kind of how I... You know what I mean? Like, he always kind of came off thinking he was so good, and in the end, he usually got it handed to him.
And he kind of looked like, to me, one of those Seagal villains.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just classic villains. And, of course, the movie we're talking about, folks, is The Sword and the Sorcerer. Came out in 1982, directed by, who would go on to, I suppose, this director, Albert Pyun, who went on to do Cyborg and Nemesis and not much else.
he was just honing his craft there, right? He was putting all of it into those few movies.
Definitely. Now, obviously, this is a sword and sorcery movie, as the title suggests, but I think one of the great things about this movie is that the imagery is what I remember more than anything. That sword.
Oh, yeah. Well, the sword is, it's different than anything we'd seen before. And to be honest with you, I don't know that I've seen anything quite like that since.
No, that's right. It's massive. I mean, this thing is bigger than him.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't look like you'd be able to swing this thing very well. So I'm not sure what it was made out of in you know, on set. But this thing's got three blades on it and just barely a handle. You know, you'd really need this thing to have a handle that was probably about 3 feet long so you could get a nice big wide grip on it.
I can just imagine that scene from Pulp Fiction done in a fantasy universe. Would you look at that gun? It's bigger than him. But it really, it's a novelty thing. And obviously that's, they made toys out of this thing. That's how popular it was.
Yeah, which is interesting. We mentioned this on Techno Retro Dads a few weeks back about how they made toys for kids back in the 80s for movies that were rated R, you know, that kids had no business going to see.
Now, speaking of rated R films, here's something that's interesting from the Chuck Norris films that we got. And this is a great thing about revisiting these movies too, by the way. First Blood. Look at First Blood. Big movie. Stallone gets hired as Rambo to come back. To get all the POWs out. And it takes a whole big mission of him going to Vietnam and doing this. Look at Missing in Action. Chuck does it in 30 minutes.
Well, you know, Chuck wasn't available during that time, so they had to go second string right there, see?
That was great. But no, this is a great film. You know, I do remember it being so popular on VHS back in the I think we didn't get it here till about 84, which is usually the way it goes. But the film itself, I remember the crazy cover that it had. It had the barbarian sort of hanging on the side with a sword and the lady in distress and the sorcerer going, "Nah."
Now, was that poster done by any artist that we would have heard of? Because it looks very much like a Frank Frazetta poster.
I think it's a Frazetta, mate. Yeah.
Is it?
Well, that's one thing we can look up now, actually, while we're doing this. The interesting thing is it's got that Conan the Barbarian feel. Now, here's the artwork. It's that one there. So it kind of looks like the sword is shining on a dark background, and there's a fire behind them. And then the sorcerer is over the top with his hands, basically casting a spell. Kingdom ruled by evil, a princess enslaved by passion, a warrior driven by justice. It even says it like the trailers, mate. I tell you, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of like the. I mean that's as schlocky. I don't want to call it cheesy because that makes it sound bad. As the introduction at the beginning of the movie, right, with the narrator.
It does, yeah, very much so. You look at it a lot. There's a couple of other theatrical posters that went out, and they're looking more towards, I suppose, the Star Wars-y sort of look, you know, or the Raiders of the Lost Ark sort of feel. But sure. I still think that, you know, that's what captured my imagination the minute I saw it. Same with Beastmaster. Beastmaster had a similar poster.
It did. Yes, it did. And now this one, actually, I found it wasn't Frazetta. It was a guy named Peter Andrew.
Ah.
But it's very Frazetta style. That kind of heavy metal kind of art, you know, from the magazine Heavy Metal.
Definitely. Yeah. Okay. Obviously, it is directed by Albert Pion, but and written as well. I didn't know that he wrote it as well. So that's brilliant. The budget was only $4 million. So you compare that to what we pay these days, you know, to get films made. That's chump change.
What do you suppose they spent most of that on?
Wow. I honestly think a lot of it must be the Wizards effects and stuff like that.
Yeah, I would say makeup, you know, costumes and the effects. But
that's crazy.
It's got some really, really beautiful shots to it. It's actually a really well crafted in the way that they shot it. You know, it like a lot of films like this at the time, the dialogue, it leaves a little something to be desired. I think that's probably one thing that knocks it down into that sort of that B-grade film era is the dialogue. But if you just look at it, man, if you just watch this thing without the sound, or at least without the dialogue, it would really make a big difference, I think.
I think so too. You're right. It's a beautifully shot film. I think one thing is that Albert is capable of really, I think, pulling off some amazing work with the cinematographer and stuff like that on any of these projects. If you look at some of the later ones, so obviously late 80s, he did Cyborg with Jean-Claude Van Damme. Now, no budget to that film. I mean, that was such a low-budget fare. It was Masters of the Universe 2 was the set they were working on because that got pulled out from Canon. Canon said, you ain't doing a sequel to Masters of the Universe. So Van Damme all of a sudden got hired, and they did a really quick script. And, you know, like to the fact that, what are we going to come up with a name for this guy? Let's just call him Gibson Rickenbacker. We're going to call the bad guy Fender Stratocaster.
So if that's the case, they didn't put nearly enough guitar music in this thing, but
I should have had guitar solos everywhere every time.
Yeah, there you go. Although the soundtrack is actually really beautiful. It's a really good fantasy soundtrack.
It really is, and I love the fact that this film in particular plays with that, you know, a cross between the orchestral and then kind of rocks it up to a certain extent too. You know, it's got the sort of kind of pump that you get from a James Horner soundtrack.
Yeah, it's got some good swashbuckling stuff, you know, and some music. The music of the time, you know, right here was it was mid early 80s, so hadn't quite got into that heavy metal. It was still a little disco-y in a lot of movies at this time, you know, but I think they avoided that, and it was much more honestly, you know, I don't know how much this movie could have influenced some of the bigger movies that came after it, like the Conan movies and stuff like that, but it really has some stuff that we hadn't seen before, even though it wasn't this gigantic, big-budget movie that was real successful.
I think so, too. I mean it was a strong enough film that for years they wanted to do a sequel to it. So, I mean, it's definitely influenced others.
Oh, now there is a sequel. Have you seen the sequel?
Is that the one with Kevin Sorbo in it?
That's right. Yeah, Kevin Sorbo. And it was actually directed by Albert Pune.
Oh, wow.
And 2010 is when it came out. It's called Tales of an Ancient Empire.
Ah, okay. I'm interested now. Wow. Okay. And oh, wow. Yeah, you're right. I'm just looking,
I have not seen this one. I've seen the poster and know a little bit about it.
Michael Paré.
Yeah, that's right. If Kevin Sorbo's in it, man, it's got to be pretty cool, right?
Because
of course,
he's awesome.
I mean, his whole stuff with Hercules was just legendary in itself. Of course, now that's all I ever see him as is Hercules. Even when he was on Supergirl here not too long ago, but it looks kind of interesting, and Ooh. the poster makes it look like I'm gonna say without seeing it. Without, you know, I don't want to judge it unfairly, but it looks like one of those kind of real cool sci-fi channel movies that they were making for quite a while.
It does. I mean, they used to put out a lot of fantasy stuff through sci-fi, you know, or post-apocalyptic fantasy stuff. There's even one with Sean Bean, which kind of worried me a little because you watch Sean Bean and within 30 minutes he's dead on screen.
Yeah, he's a... His characters are all cursed, I think.
But Game of Thrones, I mean, alone, you know, I think the only thing I've seen him in that he didn't die in was that Jupiter Ascending.
Oh, he didn't die in that one?
No. Okay.
That must have been a deleted scene.
In future. So you can't kill me now because I'm a police officer. You know, like, absolutely brilliant. No, well, and it's got vampires in it by the sound of it too. So I am keen. I'm actually going to try and track that one down, even though it's hard enough to track down Sword and the Sorcerer in Australia too. Now, the film went on to actually gross. Now, this is what's interesting. So, made for $4 million, grossed just under $40
million. Wow. So, well, that's not bad right there. I'm kind of surprised it didn't spawn more things from either this director, writer, and thing. I mean, that made a pretty good profit for the time.
And you think about it, I'm just looking at it now. It says here too that like it's obviously come out at a time where fantasy just kicked into higher gear again after John Borman's Excalibur.
That's true, and Excalibur is just a beautiful work of art that I love watching every now and then. It's that one has a special place in my heart because it was one of my dad's favorite movies of the time.
It's a beautiful film, and I always think that it's very much like Bram Stoker's Dracula, the one that Coppola did, because it was a film where they spent a lot of time on in-camera effects. There's no digital effects in any of that stuff.
Yeah,
truly, absolutely brilliant. Although, there's a part of me that thinks you could get John Borman's Excalibur, cut about 30 minutes out of it, and put a rock and roll soundtrack to it, and you might just have yourself a contender for the greatest sci-fi film ever made. It's not sci-fi, fantasy.
You're not wrong about that, actually. That's a great idea.
Because you think about it, you've got Patrick Stewart, he goes, "I will pull the sword out of the stone." You know, he goes over here and he does his thing, and you got Qui-Gon Jinn in the background going, "I don't care who you are. I don't know what you want, but I ain't pulling that sword out of that stone."
Yeah, that was a great, great, great movie.
That's right. I think these kinds of films in the early 80s are what made people, you know, in the late 90s, even in the 2000s, go back and do not just these kinds of films, but sword and sandal epics. And I think Wolfgang Peterson's Troy is probably one of the greatest.
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been too long since I saw that.
And the director's cut, if you do get to see, it is absolutely gobsmackingly gorgeous. They actually went out to a point and split the movie. I think it was into two parts, if I remember right. And but Brad Pitt and Eric Banner, hang out, mate, Eric Banner, the two of them get a lot more to build up that rivalry before the epic fight where Achilles basically owns him.
Yeah, I mean, that was a... Period pieces were big, like, in the early 2000s, you know, like that. I'm thinking... what's the Gladiator movie I'm thinking of? Oh, Gladiator. during that time, that it was so big, and I think it's kind of dwindled off now, although they still come out occasionally. They just don't seem to have the impact that they used to. But that Troy was just kind of it felt like an epic thing to me, and I'm a little surprised it wasn't a little more successful. And maybe it was. I didn't really follow its results or anything, but it just had some nice cinematic qualities to it as well.
No, exactly. Now, there's a lot of people talking about a certain Sword and Sandal epic that is coming back. A sequel is already in the works from Ridley Scott. Gladiator 2
is officially happening. Yes, I just heard that.
So, but here's the thing. Where do you go from there? Because Maximus is chilling out in heaven.
Well, I don't know what ideas he has. Maybe it's a prequel.
But it looks like they're going to go to... So he basically had a script by... Oh, this is going through a couple of different reports here. Nick Cave, the singer, the Australian singer, songwriter, is good mates with Russ. And he went up and said, "Hey, Russ, mate, how you going?" And Russ said, "Yeah, good, mate, how you going?" And he said, "Can you write me a script for Gladiator 2? He said, "Well, you're dead." He goes, "Oh, yeah, but find a way to bring him back." So... A Clash of the Titans mixed with the one, the only Gladiator is what they've got planned. So the idea
really?
Is that, yeah, so what they're trying to do is the idea of the gods deem that the only way that he's going to be able to be with his dead wife and his son in the afterlife is if he goes back and kills off this one element in the Roman Empire. And it's set around the time of Christ. So it's a little bit later, a little bit different. And so they send him back, and anyway, what happens is that he's constantly getting reincarnated over time. So you get to see the Roman part for three quarters of the film, and then all of a sudden when he dies, he comes back in the Western Front in World War One. Then...
Wow, this is like Highlander.
Kind of like Highlander, yeah. And I kind of like it, because the fact is that this guy has to be... constantly tormented at the fact that he's just brought back in war the whole time. So he's an immortal to some extent, but the last one is in Vietnam, where he basically sacrifices himself for the greater good again. But yeah, that whole idea of this kind of bigger sort of meta film, I think, would just be amazing. And it's Ridley Scott goes into your head sometimes with that cerebral stuff. So, man, I'm all for it. Bring it.
Yeah, hey, yeah, I just like going to see movies. I just enjoy the whole experience of them. And, you know, if the movie's not quite as good, I can still have a great time. I can't preach that enough to people. Just enjoy where you are. And
oh, hell yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Definitely. One of the things I've been looking at, too, is some of these great classics is that, again, they get wired in now to, you know, not just appealing to the direct, audience that they have, whether it's a fantasy film, sci-fi. And, you know, it's good to, you know, have these different, ways that we can sort of reach a wider audience, I think, when it comes to story and stuff like that. But they're bringing in sci-fi elements into things that don't need to have sci-fi elements. Or they're bringing in, might be fantasy elements into a realistic setting when it doesn't need to be heightened, if that makes sense. I think sometimes in film we need to just look at grounding our stories enough. And I think as writers and stuff... look at the immediate action that's happening.
I agree with that. I can sense sometimes when I'm watching a movie that they put something in it to kind of appeal to a wider audience that maybe the movie shouldn't even try to appeal to, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a perfect example of this, kind of the legendary example of this is Moonraker, right? The James Bond movie. Where they, I mean, it was right on the heels of Star Wars. They're like, "Now we got to get some Star Wars and James Bond, something."
Yeah.
Like, we don't. It's James Bond. You just need James Bond and James Bond. So, hey, don't get me wrong. I still love Moonraker. It's an awesome movie. but that's, you know, I'm with you. You don't always have to inject that stuff just because it's big at the time.
Yeah, and that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about characters or actors and stuff like that. Talking about the stories and themes and keeping it on point with. I think Gladiator 2 could be one of those things. If they bring too much of the Clash of the Titans ideas in, it might stray away from what is a historical epic, I think. That's the only
drama. Yeah, it's one of those things that I'm having a hard time picturing in my head, and it makes me a little hesitant. But, man, Ridley Scott, I mean, come on. It's going to be good if he's doing it. He'll figure out a way to make it look great.
That's right, because I can't see Fox letting him do Alien Awakening, the next Alien film.
Well, they should.
Yeah, they should. But the way that the last one was received, it doesn't vote well for, I suppose, the confidence on it that, for them to actually go ahead with it. But, which brings us to some of the other films that obviously this has influenced. You wouldn't have Peter Jackson going, yeah, mate, yeah, bro, I might get myself Lord of the Rings. And actually, this amazing series that we've had, 6 movies now, and Amazon now pumping out a young Aragorn series, which is just going to be brilliant. I am super keen.
I'm totally okay with it. I know I've heard a lot of people, especially big Lord of the Rings fans, you know, that are hesitant of the whole thing. But hey, I'm saying, look, more story? Go for it, you know? I mean, look how much Star Trek we have. And I can't get enough of that stuff. I love Star Trek. Even the episodes that weren't nearly as good as some of the others, I get all into them. And it's a universe, right? I mean, it's like your life. Not every day your life is going to be memorable, but you can still look back and connect everything. So I don't know. I say go for it. I'm ready to check that Lord of the Rings stuff out, especially since we'll be out of Game of Thrones there pretty soon.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is they're looking at a prequel to Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, I've heard that.
And, God, who was the act? There's a couple of actors that were being... it might be Naomi Watts, I think, is thinking about being part of that series.
Really?
Yeah, and she's...
Hadn't heard that.
She's on top form, like, as far as acting. Like, she's one of the greats from Australia, so... Mate, I tell you what, that'd be very interesting to see where they would take that story. Obviously, with George Martin, he just keep pumping that stuff out. It's just brilliant.
Yeah, if he would pump that stuff out, that would be great.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he's pumped much of anything out lately.
Winds of Winter, crikey, whenever that finally comes out, wasn't that meant to be out 2 years ago?
Or more.
You know, imagine being his literary agent. You're like, hey, George, mate, how you going? Is that book on the way today? No, sorry, we're going out, I don't know, going for a walk through the woods, something like that. We'll be back in a few days. You know, like, you think about what he's made is just unbelievable. Actually, some of his non-Game of Thrones works outside of it, when he was a sci-fi writer, is absolutely breathtaking.
Is it really? I haven't ever checked anything besides the Game of Thrones stuff, but I have the feeling that once all of the episodes are out on HBO, they'll go back and kind of wrap it up based on what we've seen on the TV show. Now that I don't know what the issue is, you know, we can only speculate about that, but just a little strange. I don't know. It makes me nervous when things like that happen, because if I say I'm going to do something and finish it, I get super stressed out until I actually finish it for someone. So I don't know. Maybe he's not like me. Clearly, he's not like me.
Yeah, obviously, Sword and the Sorcerer as a movie has influenced a number of big movies in the 80s. One of our favorites, and one of your favorites, I know, has a spinning finger-like disc called the Glaive. And, of course, we're talking about Kroll. There's been talk about a reboot or at least a continuation of Kroll for many years, because it was quite a fun film and has quite a lot of fond memory for a lot of people that grew up in the period. So if you are a film producer, you're sitting there in your little office in Hollywood, who would you get this movie made by and who would you star it with?
Oh, man. Oh, on the spot question.
Oh, yeah. Bringing it.
Who would I have Kroll made by? That's a great question. All right, if we're going for big blockbuster things, you know, maybe get a Peter Jackson in there or a Ridley Scott or something. But if we're going more for character development and passion for a genre, let's get George Lucas out of retirement.
Yeah.
Into a fantasy epic, right?
Yep.
We'll do a Krull Willow crossover. How about that? Krullo.
Krullo. Will Krull. You know, I love it. Who would you actually cast as, the characters in this?
I think it is, you're contractually obligated in Hollywood to, right now, to cast Dwayne Johnson in every lead role. So I think it's just going to be Dwayne Johnson. Well, now, who's got other than Dwayne Johnson, who's got a nice wavy head of hair that we could use? What would be an actor that would work well in that part?
All right.
Oh, Matthew McConaughey. I think he might be a little old at this point for the lead in that one.
Maybe Chris Pratt or something like that, or you could get...
I could see Chris Pratt. Chris Pratt could do it.
Pratt's good. I like that he's one of those guys who can play just about any role, too. Like, he's had enough time now to do background roles and obviously play quite a few leads now, too. So, I mean, that would be my pick. And
yeah, or maybe even, what about a Chris Pine, even, maybe? That might work pretty well.
Pine's great. And I tell you what, if you guys haven't checked out the Empire interview with him about Outlaw King, I'm the King of Scotland, putting it all now. You know, you've got to check that out, by the way, because it is a fantastic film. But Chris is all over Scotland and England right now doing Empire magazine interviews and the podcast. Go and check it out.
Sounds great.
Absolutely brilliant. You know who else I bring in this? Jack Black.
Jack Black for Kroll?
Yeah. He can play one of the criminals. You know, you had Robbie Coltrane in there.
He plays a magician.
Yeah.
Right, he plays the bungling magician in that. I'd go for that. I could see Jack Black playing that guy.
What was that crazy name he had? I'm trying to think now. Now I'm going to have to look this up.
The actor or the character?
Oh, the character. Because remember he had Ergo the Magnificent, narrow of purpose, short in stature.
Who was that? What's his name? I'm trying to think of his name. The actor. Freddie Jones. Freddie Jones was the
David,
old guy.
David Bentley.
That's it. He was in Willy Wonka.
Willy Wonka in your chocolate factory, thank you very much. Yes.
like Charlie's teacher.
That's Charlie what he did too. Teacher. Yeah.
Class dismissed.
What's going on here? Willy Wonka's and all this. Bloody hell, chocolate factories. But he was great in that, very very on point too. So, but yeah, Freddie Jones was the other one.
Yeah, that was a good movie. I love Kroll. I know I'm in a minority. I know there's a lot of underground people that like Kroll or won't admit that they like Kroll. Ooh. But I've never said a bad thing about that movie because it was so great, and I loved playing the video game. You know, I'd go get the video game in our arcade. As a kid growing up, and so I would go watch the movie, and I got pretty good at it, too.
Yeah, that was great. And I loved, too, the board game. The board game was very popular out here. I think it was Parker Brothers that put that out. But
I didn't have that one, but...
It was great. Look, the great thing about that was, I think that was the only bit of merch that we was actually given out when it came out and released. Because, I mean, they probably had plans for figures and all that sort of stuff. And definitely the horses.
Oh, the big fire horses?
The fire bears, I think,
is what they were called?
That's the ones. Yeah. So, I mean, there's quite a few in there. You had, oh, crikey, here we go. So you've got Lisette Anthony, obviously probably the most popular out of them, as she was played Lisa. Ken Marshall, who if you haven't seen that YouTube video yet, go and check it out, folks. I'll put it out for you later, but it's he played Colin. 30 years later, he gets handed the glaive. On a concert stage, and he's like, he's speechless. They're starting to interview him, and he's like, just give me a minute. And he's looking at the glaive. It's one of those moments. It's like when Mark Hamill's given back his green saber, and he's looking at it, and he's just like, what the hell? Nostalgia for them, nostalgia for us. I'll tell you what, you know, it's crazy. But, yeah, I think one of the things is about this film, Sword and the Sorcerer, it's like that too, because people remember the toy.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, as a kid, that's probably all you remember about the movie, unless you were able to sneak in the basement and get it on HBO when your parents were watching.
So, with the folks here today, let the folks know what you guys have been up to on Techno Retro Dads lately. All I can say is it's been very entertaining, especially for my gym workouts.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I see it. Techno Retro Dads is a healthy show to listen to. It keeps you fit.
Keeps you fit.
So, well, you know what? We did a lot of Halloween stuff in October. Here in November, we've been kind of celebrating fall, talking about Calvin and Hobbes, and of course, the classic one. I'm sure you'll appreciate this. They Live, John Carpenter movie, right?
Brilliant.
And you know what? As we head into December here, we got some good plans for the holiday season. Plus, you want to check out the Earbud toy catalog, where you can vote on some retro toys in our toy bracket, and each week we'll kind of spotlight a few and talk about on the show, and the ones that got narrowed down by all our earbuds, our listeners out there. So make sure you check that out, and please participate, spread the word, because it's just for fun, you know. It's just not a contest or anything. It's just for fun to talk about. So we always try to have some fun times over at Techno Retro Dads. Just enjoy whatever it is that we remember as a kid, and then share it with our families today. So we love having new people over there, and we'd love to have all you guys come join us too.
Awesome. And believe it or not, I've already voted twice on it.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. Good job. I'm very surprised right now. The ones in this bracket, I think the one as you and I are talking, it's games. And they're very close races. I was kind of surprised. I thought there'd be a runaway winner in a couple categories, and so far they're very close.
Oh, it's crazy. One of the things, too, I like that you guys do, it makes us listeners get out and check out stuff we haven't seen in years, whether it's books or the movies, obviously, mainly. But what I've really enjoyed lately is, you guys all, might just be a throwaway line, and you're like, I remember that from Masters of the Universe. And I'll be like, whoa, hang on, I didn't even know this, whatever bit of trivia. And then I'm forced to go and watch the two seasons of it again because I need to see where that was. And you're like, oh, yeah, I did not know that.
Oh, hey, I tell you what, that is what I've been doing for the last 6 years. Every time I talk to Shaz Bazaar on the show, I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that. I got to go check it out. And then it's just like, you get stuck in a rabbit hole. You just you find new things that you want to keep watching.
And I think that it always keeps us on the know, where things are. Like one of the ones we're doing right now is a revisit of Robotech, which we haven't done in probably about 5 or 6 years. And my brother hasn't seen it since probably at least high school times. So they've re-released it not in HD because it's just not going to be possible, but near enough close to it on DVD out here in Australia. And by the way, folks, if you haven't got it now, you won't get it because Harmony Gold loses the license next year.
Oh.
So it means all old Robotech will not be available anymore. You won't be able to get it. But this little fella popped up, of course. Caron. How are you doing over there? I got myself some Zen Trotty. Yee-haw. And if only that was the voice. My goodness. Going back through it, just how much of a funny show it was, and the work by the voice actors, which I know them quite well now, the guys, particular Ben Dixon and Grell and Lunk, same actor. Richard Epcar's become a very good friend of mine. And Richard's always said that it was like a frat house party when they recorded all that stuff. So a lot of that fun that came from those recordings would actually show up through the show. And you can actually hear it. Like they were just, it was recorded with people, one person would finish while one person's sleeping on the couch, and they'd tag out. And they'd be like, righto, you're up next. And then they go in and do their recording for 6 hours or something like that. And people were just, like, they had 6 weeks to record everything for all three shows together.
Wow. Wow, that is crazy. I don't know much about that, so it's listening to my friends like you talk about it that were much more into it when it was on, and then revisiting it now, that has really gotten me interested in those things. So and hearing stories like that makes me like it even more, because the people that were making it were passionate about it and enjoying themselves. It wasn't just a job.
Oh, definitely. Now, folks, you've got to check out, obviously, the shows, Techno Retro Dads. Get involved in the competitions they have over there. And get involved in the chatter, because it's all about enjoying these retro things that we love. I'm just looking around my room now and thinking about things that I've, probably in the last 12 months, thanks to you guys, gone and got out of my storage unit or, gone and found out. And it's even things that I think it was throwaway lines of, what if Darth Vader had a beer coaster? And it even has that. Isn't that crazy? So I got one.
I should have known. Yeah, that's awesome.
And here's the problem with Australia. We can't afford good things. So when you get a Rubik's Cube, you got to get a hole in it.
Oh, I've seen those. Those are pretty cool, actually.
They're not bad, eh? Not bad. I still haven't... I've had that for about 9 years now. I still haven't figured it all out.
Oh, see, here in America, of course, we're all about excess and having more than we should. So I have, you know, the
fire. Oh, my goodness.
Which I will gladly send out to somebody if you want to solve it for me. I'm not... yeah.
do you guys over there remember Rubik's Link the Rings?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I had it. I had it. Matter of fact, until my son was about 6 years old.
Yeah.
And it finally snapped one time. And he used to love playing with it, too. Love that thing.
That was great. And then the next one I could never solve. I solved that one. The next one was called Unlink the Rings.
Was that the one you had to slide?
Yeah, yeah, just slide things around.
I was bad at those.
It wasn't as easy, you know. I tried all those sorts of ones, you know. But I love that. See, we did a lot more games, I think, back in the 80s out here. And kids just don't do that these days, you know. We're trying to get back into, though, is tabletop. And currently out here, I've joined a group with Bartizu, who's a dear friend of myself and others that are on the old show. And one of the great things about it, we got into the new D&D. And after I saw the Art and Arcana out there, I saw all the new books, and they've been reduced in cost out here in Australia. So you're not paying $100 for a book like you do in the States. We paid $35.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Well, hey, I cannot recommend that book, Art and Arcana, The Art of Dungeons and Dragons. It's a beautiful book written by our good friend Michael Whitwer, who we were able to talk to on Techno Retro Dads a few weeks back, and some of his other friends and family members wrote that book. So I recommend checking that out for sure. It's gorgeous. Even if you're not into Dungeons and Dragons, it's just a magnificent art book full of history.
Oh, it's brilliant. One of the great things too about it is that, you know, I think this book in particular brings back a lot of the memories of the first couple of games, and even 5th edition now, this new one, is bringing you, the character, back into power more. As much as it is the GM, you're getting more to do.
See, I would love to kind of get some people together around my area. See, part of my problem about playing Dungeons & Dragons is that all of my friends are scattered all over the world, and not so much where I am, so... But I would love to kind of get together and get back into that, because it's been years since I actually sat down and played a game.
It's great, because we went and played, and of course you've all got to come up with your own characters and come up with your names, and we've got all these, you know, like, I suppose character names like Ergo the Magnificent or Drebanion the Strong and all that sort of thing. And it went around the circle and they said, righto, Adam, what's your character's name? Well, he's a Draconian sorcerer. Yeah, what's his name? Bob. Who? Bob. Really? Yeah, he's unassuming. It was great. But there's a lot of comedy involved in that. And, you know, with the campaign that we did, I was the only character left standing. Because I just would get in a bit of combat, step out of it, and just heal myself, and sit in the corner, wait for them to all tank out. All about survival. But he was not of a good alignment.
The opposite of Leroy Jenkins. That's it.
Unbelievable, I tell you, it's crazy. But I want to thank you so much for chatting a bit of fantasy B-grade action movies with us here today. Where can the folks catch up with Techno Retro Dads?
Oh, you know, we would love for you to join us on any of the social media platforms, of course. You can find all of our shows at retrosapp.com, and you can find us on Facebook, Techno Retro Dads. You can find us on Twitter, find us on Instagram. And, of course, like you said, getting involved in conversations with other listeners and with us sometimes, and you over on the Discord channel. So if you just go to retrosapp.com, there's an invite for the Discord channel, which is like it's just kind of like hanging out in forums and talking to people, but it's all really super positive and fun with lots of crazy fun stuff going on all the different channels they got over there.
And we got lots of Aussie culture coming that way too, because the Juice Cast movie guys go, hey Adam, tell us a little bit more about mullets and movies. So you'll catch all that on there. I want to thank Jedi Schwa for being on the show today, mate. You're a champion.
Oh, thank you so much. It's always great to talk to you. And you guys take care out there. And as you're approaching summer, make sure you have a great summer where you are.
Will do, will do. Out here in the sweltering Australia.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture. Also, Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we discuss all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater, our podcast celebrating the cult classic and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. The End Zone, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. Discoville, a Star Trek Discovery and the Orville podcast. The Hair Metal Podcast, if you're a hard rock music fan, the Hair Metal Podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, as we discuss all things Doctor Who, past and present. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Master Feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network. On Instagram, we are at Fandom Podcast Network. And on Twitter, at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at FandomPodcastNetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and support the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom. Here's where you can find all the great shows on Fandom Podcast Network. You can go to podbean.com where we are at fpnet.podbean.com. It's a great way to check out the show or even download the Podbean app off iTunes or maybe Google Play. Fandom Podcast Network on social channels. You can also find it us on Twitter on the handle at Fanpod Network. You can also catch us at Facebook on facebook.com/Fandom Podcast Network. You can show all the shows on your iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or Google Play for Android users. If you'd like to contact us directly, you can find us at on email at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can catch me, the host of the show, here at Obi Pop Culture on both Twitter and Instagram. To get your own Fandom Podcast Network t-shirts and other apparel, please visit Fandom Podcast Network store on TeePublic. On iTunes, please leave us a review on iTunes so new fans can find us easier. We love 5-star reviews, of course, but we love general feedback. Please listen to our other podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at fbnet.podbean.com. Check out Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. You also catch Culture Clash, the weekly pop culture show. We also have Couch Potato Theater, the guilty pleasure favorites. We also have Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast. If you're into American football, why not check out The End Zone with Carl Wagner and, of course, Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. We also have, if you're an Alfred Hitchcock fan, The Good Evening Show. If you're into Star Trek Discovery and, of course, The Orville, you can catch us at Discoville. Also, if you're into Poison, Guns N' Roses, and, as Kevin's brought up, LA Guns, check out the amazing Hair Metal podcast, which is hosted by Kevin himself. So go and check that out. Also, check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, all on the Master Feed on the Podbean page. Be sure to email in any movies you'd like us to check out here on the show. And, of course, make sure they're big red and make sure they're good. I'm Adam O'Brien. We'll catch you next fortnight on here at Fandom Podcast Network's Lethal Mullet. G'day, mate. How you going? I'll see you later.